Chapter 109. The front door to the cabin had no lock. Deputy Mills waited for us outside, and once we entered, we smelled why. Some combination of food and garbage had been rotting in here, possibly for months. It was beyond putrid.
"So much for this being a little slice of heaven on earth," Bree said, putting a handkerchief over her nose as if this were a homicide scene.
Maybe it was. The main room was a kitchen-slash-dining-slash-living area. A picture window at the back looked onto the river. All along the sidewall, Belle had a workbench littered with tools and several dozen fishing flies in various stages of completion. A small collection of rods hung on the wall. Other than two leather easy chairs, the furniture seemed to have been made by Tyler Bell himself, including a pair of pine bookcases.
"You can tell a lot about a man by his books," Mills said, finally deciding to join us.
He stood in front of them, scanning the lot. "Biography? Biography? Cosmology? All nonfiction? That say anything to you?" "Whose biographies? That would be my first question," I said, and came over to look for myself. There were several volumes on American presidents, Truman, Lincoln, Clinton, Reagan, and Bush's 41 and 43. Other world leaders, too. Emperor Hirohito, Margaret Thatcher, Bin Laden, Ho Chi Minh, Churchill. "Delusions of grandeur, maybe?" I said. "Fits the bill for DCAK. At least what we think we know about him."
"You don't sound too confident about your intel,"
huffed Mills, who was a huffy sort. "I'm not. He's been messing with us from the start. He's a game player." Bell's bedroom was smaller and darker. Dank, actually. He had a toilet and sink right in the room, partitioned off with another bookcase. I didn't see a tub or shower, unless you counted the river. In fact, it reminded me of a prison cell. And that made me think of Kyle Craig again. What the hell did Kyle have to do with all this? The only decorations were three framed photos on the wall, in a vertical stack that reminded me of the new website. The top one was an old black-and-white wedding portrait, presumably Mom and Dad. The middle was a picture of two golden retrievers, and then a shot of five adults standing in front of the same red pickup that now sat abandoned outside. I recognized three of them right away, and that gave me a start. Tyler Bell, Michael Bell, and Marty Lowenstein Bell, who would eventually be killed by her husband. The other two, a man and a woman, weren't familiar to me. One woman held two fingers up in a V behind Tyler's head. So, she thought he was the devil?
"It's strange, isn't it?" Bree said. "They actually look happy. Don't you think so?"
"Maybe they were. Hell, maybe he still is." Finally, after hours of poring over every inch of the bedroom, we went back out to the main room to tackle the kitchen area, which we had saved for last. There was no sense opening that fridge any sooner than we had to. It was a propane appliance and had obviously run down a long time ago. The shelves were half-stocked. Most of the food looked like bulk purchases, grains and beans in plastic bags alongside other unrecognizable produce mush.
"He sure likes mustard," Bree said.
There were several kinds in the door.
"And milk."
He had 2 half-gallons, one of them unopened. I leaned in closer to look. "Milk doesn't keep," I said.
"Milk's not alone."
Bree had the handkerchief up over her mouth and nose again. "No, I mean one of these is dated one day after anyone saw him around here." I stood up and closed the refrigerator door. "The other carton's dated 9 days after that. Why would he buy more milk if he was getting ready to disappear?"
"And," Bree said, "why would he need to disappear so suddenly? He seemed pretty safe and secure here. Who would bother him?"
"Right. That's the other angle to figure out. So which one do we follow?" But the question was almost immediately moot.
As soon as I'd posed it, my phone rang, and everything changed all over again. Chapter 110. I looked at my caller ID. Probably the kids, I told Bree, and picked up. Hello from Big Sky Country, I said. Instead, I heard, Alex, it's me. It's Nana. The tension in Nana's voice created waves of dread that traveled up and down my spine. What's going on? The kids okay? I asked automatically. Damon? The children are fine. She let out a quavering sigh. It's Samson, Alex. John has gone missing. No one's heard from him all day. The words hit me like icy water. I'd been half expecting the kids' cheerful voices when I answered. Hi, Daddy. When are you coming home? Will you bring me something? But instead, it was this. Alex, are you there? I'm here. The scene around me came back into focus. Bree was watching intently, wondering what was going on. Then her cell went off, and she took the call. I had a feeling that we were hearing the same story, just from different sources. Davies, Bree mouthed. The superintendent of detectives was on her line. Yes, sir, I'm listening. Nana, hold for a second, I said. Samson went to the gym around lunchtime. Bree gave me a running commentary on her call from Davies. They just found his car, but not him. They found some blood in the car, Alex. He's alive, I told her. If he was dead, we'd have heard from DCAK already. He's going to want an audience again. Chapter 111.
He had controlled other killers before. In particular, a brilliant boy who called himself Casanova and who had worked in the Research Triangle near the University of North Carolina and Duke. Of course, in those days, he had been with the FBI. He'd even explained himself to Alex Cross once. What I do, it's what all men want to do. I live out their secret fantasies, their nasty little daydreams. I don't live by rules created by my so-called peers. He claimed he attracted others who thought as he did. Now Kyle Craig had his own ideas about how things should go. He knew it was time for him to take charge, maybe even past time. The man known as DCAK had contacted him through Wainwright, his lawyer when he was in jail, as had other freaks of his kind. DCAK had claimed to be an admirer and a student, as had Wainwright himself, but now it was time for the teacher to step forward and take control of this game. X marks the spot. That should be easy enough to figure out, he was thinking, especially for someone who considered himself so brilliant. Kyle was in position a few minutes before 12 on Saturday night, as promised. He was interested in what would happen next, from several perspectives. First of all, was DCAK bright enough to get himself to the meeting place? That was a legitimate question, but Kyle figured that the killer would be. DCAK was a clever enough fiend. Then, would DCAK actually show his face to him? That was a little trickier proposition to consider, and Kyle thought the odds were probably 50-50. It all depended on what kind of a risk-taker the killer turned out to be. How truly confident was he? Or would he show up in one of his theatrical disguises? Maybe he'll come as me. Kyle smiled as he let the final thought drift across his mind. Then he moved on to other things. He continued to be intrigued with the concept of freedom, to be out here in the world like this. He could feel his heart beating, steady, but at an accelerated pace. He was getting better and better at controlling his body and mind. Then he heard something. Someone was here. A voice coming from behind him. In your honor. DCAK had arrived, and now he stepped forward from a row of shadowy oak trees. No mask, no disguise. A tall, well-built man who looked to be in his 30s. Rather cocky. Directly behind him loomed Alex Cross's house on 5th Street. X marks the spot. That would be Cross's house, of course. I'm honored as well, said Kyle, knowing that they were both lying, wondering if this was as delicious for DCAK as it was for him.
Chapter 112.
It's good to finally meet you in person, DCAK said, but he seemed a little nervous and stiff. Everything you said has come true. All of it. Yes, I told you I would get out of ADX, and here I am, Kyle said. He, too, seemed a little shy, but it was only an act. Is he asleep in there? Does he sleep? DCAK asked, gesturing toward the Cross house across 5th. He knew the place well and already had dozens of photos from every angle. Top floor. That's where he usually works, figures out his puzzles, Kyle said. He doesn't seem to be home, does he? No lights up there. Actually, he isn't. He's in Montana chasing me. You think he's figured this game of ours out? I don't, said DCAK. There you have it, then. But you should be careful. I wouldn't ever underestimate Dr. Cross. He has a sixth sense about these things, and he's obsessive, a very hard worker. He could surprise you. DCAK couldn't hold back a trace of a smile. Cruel. Is that what happened to you? You mind me asking such a blunt question? Not at all. What happened to me was that my worst enemy finally caught up with me. My pride, my ego, my hubris. Near the end, I made it too easy for Cross. You hate him, don't you? You want to bring him down in a public way. Kyle smiled now. DCAK was projecting, revealing more than he should about himself. Well, I do want to humble Cross. I wouldn't mind destroying his reputation. But no, I don't hate Alex. Not at all. Actually, I consider him a dear friend. DCAK laughed out loud. I would hate to be one of your enemies. Yes, Kyle Craig said, and then he laughed too. You wouldn't want to get on my bad side. So am I? Have I gone too far? Kyle reached out and patted the killer's shoulder to let him know that everything was good between the two of them. Now, tell me about yourself. I want to know it all. And then, Kyle said, grinning again, you can tell me about your partner. I saw someone lurking back there in the shadows. I'd hate to have to shoot whoever it is. But, of course, I will. The woman who went by the name Sandy Quinlan stepped forward from the tree line. In your honor, were her first words to the great Kyle Craig. Perhaps disingenuous, but maybe not. Certainly fawning. Of course, she was an actress too. Kyle nodded slowly, then said, So, tell me about John Sampson. Where are you keeping him? And what do you have planned?
Chapter 113. Bree and I rushed back to Kalispell late that evening, only to find that our original flights were still the fastest way home. There weren't any alternatives, at least not one that we could afford. So we checked into a motel, where neither of us got much sleep. Not being able to help Samson during those critical first hours was killing both of us, but especially me. John and I had been best friends since we were kids, and I had a bad feeling about this. Still, I was with Bree, and we slept in each other's arms. We finally arrived in D.C. on Sunday, wired, but totally focused. I called Billy Sampson from the gate and told her we'd be at their house in 20 minutes. I checked in with Superintendent Davies on our way to the car. He was overseeing this personally. Davies was a friend of John's, too. New development while you were in the air, Davies told me. The bastard's running a webcast sometime today. What do you mean? What kind of webcast? What time? We don't have all the details yet. There was an email around 2, same distribution as the last one. That meant a full media press. He gave the URL for his site and just said it'd be going live by tonight. Bree and I'll be there as soon as we can. We're going to see Billy Sampson first. It's more or less on the way. Don't take it offline. Let it keep running. We need to see what he's up to. Already with you on that. It may be our only way to track this. And by this, we both knew Davies meant Sampson's murder and the gross public spectacle it was meant to become. I hung up with Davies just as we got to the car. What did he say? Bree wanted to know. I didn't answer right away. I was too busy staring at a package that was tape-mounted to the driver's door. White paper, silver duct tape. I'd seen something very much like it before. Bree, listen to me now. Back away from the car. Come over here with me. Take it very slow and keep back. She came around to look.
Jesus, is it an explosive?
I don't know what it is. I took out my mini mag light and leaned in for a closer look. It could be anything. But when it toned, we both jumped back real fast. Chapter 114. It took us a couple of seconds to realize that the sound we were hearing was a ringing phone, and that it was inside the package. I tore open the white paper and got a handful of donut crumbs, along with the black Motorola. The donut was some kind of lame cop joke, I figured. Instead of caller ID, the phone showed a picture. It was of Sampson, and he was blindfolded. There was a wide gash and dried blood on the side of his face. I took a deep breath to keep the anger from overwhelming me before I answered the call. Bell?
Cross?
He mocked my inflection. Where is he?
I talk, you listen. Now I want both of you to take out your own phones and hold them in the air. Hold them between two fingers, if you would.
No, you listen to me. I want to talk to Sampson before I do anything. There was a pause and a shuffle. Then I heard a muted,
"It's for you."
Then Sampson's voice, clear and unmistakable.
"Alex, don't do it."
"John," I called out. But Bell was already back on the line.
"Your phones? In the air. Both of them."
I swiveled around and scanned the garage. Someone was definitely watching us, relaying information, but I didn't see anyone anywhere.
"Now or never, Dr. Cross. You don't want me hanging up on you. Trust me, you don't."
"Bree, get out your phone. Hold it in the air." He had us put the cell phones behind the back wheels of my car and then get in.
"Now back up. Over the phones. Then leave the garage and take a right turn."
"Where are we going?"
"No questions, just go. Hurry, time's running out."
I heard the crunch of our cells as I backed out over them.
"Fuck,"
Bree muttered. She wasn't angry about the phones, just that we were following his orders. We had barely hit the street when Bree scribbled something and held it down low for me to see. Black Highlander, DC plates, female, two cars behind. I saw the Highlander and the woman driver in my rearview mirror. Long, dark hair, sunglasses. I couldn't tell much of anything else. "Who's the tail, Bell? Is that my friend from Baltimore?" There was a sickening thud on the line, and I heard Sampson moan loudly.
"That's what questions get you from here on out. Got any more?"
I didn't answer.
"Good thinking. Now take a left at the next light, and keep your fucking mouth shut unless I ask for your opinion."
Chapter 115. I would have probably suspended another officer for doing what we were doing, but with Samson's life in jeopardy, I didn't see how there was any choice. For the next few minutes, Bree and I stuck to hand gestures and notes while DCAK barked out directions. The black Highlander with the woman driver stayed right with us, never getting more than a couple of car lengths behind. Bree scribbled, "Idea where we're going?" I shook my head, just enough for her to see. "How do we turn this thing around?" Another subtle head shake. "Weapons in the car?" I sighed, then shook my head again. We had traveled to Montana without them. Maybe Tyler Bell guessed as much. There had been no mention of them when we ditched our phones. He navigated us back into Washington, eventually onto Massachusetts Avenue and then 7th Street, moving away from Capitol Hill. My mind raced in a dozen different directions during the stretches of silence. Where the hell was he taking us? And what would happen when we got there? 7th turned into Georgia. Then we passed the Howard University campus and kept going. Why this part of town? Why was any of this happening? Somewhere between Columbia Heights and Petworth, we came into a low-grade retail stretch with half a dozen fast food and car repair joints. Bell told me to slow down now and pay close attention. Trust me, I'm paying attention. I watched the numbers as we passed a Jamaican patty stand, a nail salon, a gas station, a pawn shop, and then one of several empty storefronts.
Number 3337,
Bell said.
See it?
I sure did. An orange rented banner was pasted over the original for rent sign in the window.
Take the next alleyway and come into the building from the side. No cheap tricks. I can't promise the same.
Chapter 116. I pulled down a narrow single lane to a small parking area in back, with room for maybe 3 vehicles. When we got out, I saw the black Highlander blocking the alley entrance, or exit, depending on how you looked at it. The driver watched us from behind the wheel, looking both mysterious and threatening. I was almost certain it was a woman, but so far not everything had been as it seemed. Bree and I moved toward the building. We found a battered green steel door, propped open with half of a brick. Inside, there was an enclosed cement stairwell. It felt a little like a Saw movie set.
"Go down the stairs,"
said Tyler Bell.
"Go ahead. Bite the bullet."
An oddly brilliant strip of light showed under another door at the bottom of the stairs. "Bell, what's down there? Where are we going?"
"Close the door behind you when you come in, and do come in, or else there will be a terrible accident momentarily, involving your friend."
Bree and I looked at each other. This was the time to turn around, if any, and that wasn't going to happen, at least not for me.
"We don't have any choice," Bree said. "Let's go. We get any chance, we take it."
I went down first. The walls were rough cinder block with no rail. There was a vague sulfuric smell that I could taste on the tip of my tongue. When we got to the door at the bottom of the stairs, I grabbed a rusted knob that wouldn't turn. So I pushed instead, and it swung open. And then, a spotlight hit my eyes. I focused as best I could and saw it was one of several on tripod stands, illuminating every corner of an otherwise dank basement.
"There's your boy."
Samson sat tied to a chair with his hands behind his back. A band of silver tape was stretched over his eyes. When he turned toward the sound of the door, I saw the terrible gash on his face, still wet. What was worse, his blood had been used to smear the letters DCAK on the wall behind him. Lots of blood. 2 empty chairs stood to Samson's right, each with a coil of rope on the floor next to it. Somebody, presumably Tyler Bell, stood off to one side. He had a video camera in one hand and a gun in the other, both pointed our way. His face was still in shadows, always the mystery man to this point. but that was going to end now, wasn't it? A cable snaked out of the camera over to a sawhorse and a plank table full of equipment. I spotted a laptop open to Bell's familiar homepage, but with a difference. Where he'd once had an image of a static-filled television, now there was a live shot of Bree and me standing there looking at ourselves. Bell's head slowly moved from the camera viewfinder up to our faces. When he saw me watching him, he said,
"Welcome to my studio."
Chapter 117. "Samson, you okay?" I asked. "John? John?" Finally, he gave a weak nod.
"Couldn't be better."
He didn't look it. He was hunched over severely, with dark stains down his gray t-shirt and sweats.
"Well said, Detective Samson. It would appear that I'm not the only skilled thespian in the room."
"That's my Glock." Bree was staring at the gun clenched in Bell's hand.
"Yes, it is. Very good. Don't you remember when Neil Stevens took it from you?" "Yes, yes, that was me. What can I say? I can act."
"I remember everything, asshole. You're not as good as you think you are."
"Perhaps, but apparently that still makes me good enough, doesn't it?"
"What is all this?" I asked, trying to slow things down, trying to slow Bell down anyway, and maybe even get a few answers from him.
"Oh, I'm sure you've figured out most of it, Dr. Cross. You're smart enough for that, aren't you?"
"So if I said 3337 Georgia Avenue, I tried."
"You'd be wasting your breath, of course. No one is watching. Yet."
Bell dipped his eyes toward the camera and back.
"Live audio would have been nice, but then again, I'm not an idiot. Detective Stone, I want you face down, hands out at your side. Cross?"
He motioned toward the center chair.
"Have a seat. Take a load off."
"What about—" He fired once into the wall just over Samson's shoulder.
"I said, sit down."
I did as I was told. And then footsteps sounded overhead. They steadily crossed the floor and thumped down some nearby stairs. Not the ones Bree and I had used, though. Another entrance. Tyler Bell kept the camera aimed at me without actually looking around. I guessed that he wanted my reaction to this on film. A door at the far end of the room opened. I couldn't see who was there. Not yet.
"What took you so long?"
Bell said.
"Sorry, had to lock up. Not the best of neighborhoods."
Then I realized who it was. The woman I knew as Sandy Quinlan was just walking into the room. She'd taken off the dark wig and glasses she'd worn while she was driving the Highlander. Now she looked the way I was used to seeing her, except for her eyes. They played over me as though we'd never met. And with the shock of seeing Sandy Quinlan here came another rush of clarity, and of grudging respect for DCAK. "Anthony," I said. Not a question, a statement of fact. I didn't fool myself into thinking that was his real name, but it was how I knew him. As I stared at DCAK, I could see the resemblance now. He was pretty good with makeup, and he was a talented actor. I had to give him that much. He took a little bow.
"I am good, aren't I? Stage acting, for the most part. New York, San Francisco, New Haven, London. In many ways, I'm proudest of the way I played Anthony, and played you as well, Dr. Cross. As they say, in your face."
"So, are you Tyler Bell?" I asked next. He seemed a little surprised by the question. Or was he acting again?
"Didn't you hear? The poor bastard went crazy. Came to D.C. and murdered a shitload of people, including the detective who killed his brother. Then he just disappeared off the face of the earth. No one ever saw him again."
Bree asked, "Did you kill Bell in Montana?"
"Tell you what,"
he wagged the Glock in little circles,
"let's get you ready for the broadcast first. Then I'll show you what happened to Tyler Bell. How's that for cooperating fully with the police?"
Sandy was standing next to him now. He kissed her, making a show of it, and gave her the gun. Then he transferred the camera to her as well. Now what? She said,
Smile, or whatever. Just be natural. Be yourselves.
She bent her knees for a steadier shot and zoomed out until the image on the laptop included Samson, Bree, and me.
Okay, I'm set here. Whenever you're ready, we can begin. We're going live now. We're rolling. And action.
Chapter 118. Anthony DeMeo, that was the only name I had for him, slowly walked around behind me, which was not exactly where I wanted him to be.
Out of sight, out of mind? Or maybe not, Doc.
Suddenly, the rope dug into my wrists as he tightened it, then knotted it off. Next, he anchored it to an eye hook or grommet, something in the floor that I couldn't see. The contraption kept me from standing, though, or even sitting up straight. That's why Samson's frame was so hunched over, I realized. And it was all playing out in real time on the laptop across from me. I wondered how many people were watching this right now, and I hoped Nana and the kids weren't among them. When he finished with me and then Bree, he retrieved his gun from Sandy and took his place at the center of the floor. He tucked the Glock in the rear of his waistband, then went into a half squat, hands clasped behind him like they were tied the same as ours. What the hell was he doing now? His face screwed into a terrible grimace. Then he sobbed loudly. He continued to sob. He was acting, I realized with a start, playing another part. Who was he this time? He was definitely playing someone other than himself, pretending to sob, to be sad.
Why are you doing this to me? I don't understand. Please, just let me get up. I won't run away. I promise. Please, man, I'm begging you. I'm begging you.
Suddenly, the gun came out from behind Anthony's back, and he pointed it at his own head. Now he spoke as DCAK.
You want to stay alive, Mr. Bell? You just keep on talking for me. Let me hear you say A-E-I-O-U.
A-E-I-O-U.
He blubbered in what I assumed was a pretty good imitation of Tyler Bell. You closed Bell's bank account yourself, right? Bree asked before I got the chance. And played Tyler Bell at the grocery store before that, I added. That explained the milk and other duplicate food we'd found in the refrigerator back at the cabin. Anthony stood up straight again and turned side to side, showing off the beard, the nose, the heavy brow.
Pretty good makeup job, right? Took the molds right off Tyler Bell's face.
Jesus Christ!
Bree sounded more disgusted than anything. You almost make me ashamed to be human.
Wait, I got another one for you. This is good shit. Check it out, detectives.
He grew still for a moment. His face morphed into anguish, but someone else's, not Bell's. The posture turned crooked, the energy was less frenetic, and the voice, the one he'd used in our sessions, was deeper, southern, with a different timbre than the others.
Oh, Jesus, I killed my best friend. Matthew, man, I'm so sorry. I'm so, so sorry. What am I gonna do now?
His speech slowed as he went on, and the accent broadened until it had become a caricature of itself.
I ain't nothing but a poor sumbitch of a vet with a shrink that don't know Gulf War syndrome from German fucking measles.
His eyes fell coldly on me.
I got it all on tape, Dr. Croft. Every one of our sessions on audio. With me right there under your nose. I took some pictures, too.
He looked over at Sandy.
You and her. When Sandy tongue-kissed you in front of your office and said she wished you'd met her under different circumstances. I'll tell you a secret.
Sandy replayed the moment between her and me from outside my office.
I wish I'd met you somewhere else.
I remembered the kiss and how Sandy had motioned me over to the curb, apparently setting up a photo op for Anthony. Okay, I said. Now how about why?
How about because no one else can do what we can do? No one. Or how about because we worked almost 10 years in the theater and barely made enough money to pay the rent? Or 'cause we saw the shine you have, or used to have, and wanted some for ourselves?
He stopped and stared at me for several beats.
Is that what you want to hear, Dr. Cross? Does that help you put us into some little box that you can understand a little better?
I stared back. It all depends. Is any of it the truth? He laughed, and so did Sandy.
Nah, not a word. How could someone like me not do well in life? I have money, and now I have fame. Even Kyle Craig is a fan, and we're fans of Kyle's. Talk about a small world. Kyle Craig is a hero of ours, just like Bundy and Gacy, and Gary Sinise. When Kyle got slammed into ADX Florence, we figured out how to make contact. He wanted to hear all about what we were up to. We felt the same way about him. There are a lot of us out there, Doctor. The ones who kill, and the ones who only wish they could. Kyle's lawyer was a fan, too. A devoted fan, you'd have to say. And now Kyle Craig is following our story the way we used to follow his. He's right here in Washington. That's exciting, don't you think?
Chapter 119. I watched DCAK's live performance because that's what it was, a calculated act. But something else was happening here, something much more interesting to me right now. It all went back to that camping trip at Catoctin Mountain Park. Bree's hands worked steadily behind her back, mostly indiscernibly from what I could tell. She was trying to undo the ropes around her wrists. My view of the laptop let me know that much. It also told me I needed to keep Anthony and Sandy face to face, focused on me, not on what Bree was trying to do. But Tyler Bell gets the credit for all this? Not the two of you? Especially not Sandy? I asked, as if I cared.
You're not paying attention. All this,
he swept his arm around the room,
is just today's mindfuck. Once we're gone, once everyone sees the story, then it happens all over again. Maybe with a new cop stooge, or maybe a news reporter, a news anchor, a big shot at the Washington Post or USA Today.
You know, you're not the first to run something like this, right? Colin Johns, Miami, 1995. And here, Anthony's veneer cracked just a little bit.
Never heard of him.
That's my point, exactly. Colin Johns was famous for about, 5 minutes. And he was a lot better at this than you are, either of you. Anthony stood there with his arms folded, shaking his head back and forth. I could tell he was angry at me now.
You're really pretty bad as a shrink, you know that? This is supposed to, what, make me not kill you?
No, but it might take some of the enjoyment out of it. Confidence was the game here, not facts, not the techniques of therapy. I was making it up as fast as I could. I asked, how about Ronnie Jessup? 3 homicides, all of them on live TV. He even used his real name. You ever hear of Ronnie Jessup? You, Sandy?
No, but a dirty little birdie told me that you're about to die. I can't wait.
In 2 strides, Anthony crossed the floor and smashed me in the face with the butt of his gun.
Keep it up, Dr. Cross.
He loomed there, ready to swing again, but I figured he wouldn't want me unconscious now. I was here to watch. I spit a mouthful of blood on the floor. Madeline Purvis, Boston, 1958. I threw out another psychopathic killer's name for him.
All right, that's it. I'm invoking the gag rule.
He stormed over to the props table, tucked the gun in his waistband again, and picked up a roll of duct tape. It crackled loudly as he tore off a length, then started back to me. I turned my head away, not to stop him, but to get him into a better position. One way or the other, this was it. Either Bree was ready, or she wasn't. As Anthony stepped in close with a strip of tape, Bree's hands flew up from behind her back. Sandy saw it too.
Bro, look out!
Bro? The two of them were brother and sister? That was a twist I hadn't seen coming. Maybe because of the sex scene on the couch in my office. But possibly they were lovers, too. Chapter 120. Whoever Anthony was, he wheeled on Bree as she managed to pull away his gun. He caught her face with a fast, hard backhand. The Glock fired, missed Anthony, but Bree went spinning to one side. She hit the wall behind her overturned chair. Suddenly, Sandy had a gun in her hand, and it was aimed at me. Bree managed to level the Glock at her and fire, twice. She wasn't fooling around. Both shots struck Sandy Quinlan in the chest. Her mouth opened wide in shock, and I think she was dead as she stood there with the gun in her hand. Then Sandy crumpled like a marionette, and that didn't make me feel very good. I'd spent too much time with Sandy. I thought I knew her, even if I hadn't. She'd been a patient. I was struggling to my feet now, pulling with all my might on the spike in the floor, which started to give. It had to give. Bree fired again. One of the spotlights exploded as Anthony passed under it. He was getting away, running in a low crouch. He was also laughing, playing another part, or just being himself. I heaved, legs straining, and the rope finally pulled free. It slackened on my wrists, enough for me to wrench my hands out anyway. Then I ran after Anthony. "Call for backup," I shouted to Bree. The black Motorola was still on the ground. So was Sandy Quinlan, wide-eyed and bleeding from two wounds so tightly bunched that they almost looked like one. I hit the stairs and immediately heard glass smashing above me. Anthony, DCAK, was getting out of there, wasn't he? Seconds later, I stumbled up into an empty storefront. The door to the street was closed and still had a padlock, but the display window was no more than glass shards and air. I spotted an old wooden chair lying out on the sidewalk. I ran up and climbed through the opening in the window. People hovered outside, watching me like I was the boogeyman. A kid pointed up the block. "White guy," he said. I saw Anthony then, running at a full clip on the other side of the street. He looked back and spotted me too. Then he ducked into a store on his right. "Call the police," I shouted for anyone who would listen and maybe help. "That's DCAK," I added. Then I tore up the sidewalk after him. Chapter 121. The place DCAK had entered was a hole-in-the-wall restaurant for Mexican takeout. There were no tables in the front, just one very shaken old woman splayed on the floor, and a skinny cashier still pressed to the wall like he was his own shadow. I ran around the counter, pushing through a swinging door back into the kitchen. The temperature instantly went up about 20 degrees. Two cooks shouted at me in Spanish. Too late. I saw Anthony come at me from the right. What the hell? A cast-iron pan burned through my shirt and sent searing pain up my arm and right into my brain. My gun went flying off somewhere behind the stove. I countered reflexively with my other hand, an uppercut to his temple, a second punch to his throat. He let go of the frying pan, and I grabbed it myself. I pushed it into Anthony's face, then let it go before it fried the skin off my hand. He howled and stumbled back, blackened prosthetic skin sagging around one ear. Both of the cooks screamed as if they were the ones who'd just gotten burned. Anthony steadied himself on the edge of an industrial range. He grabbed another cooking pan and hurled sizzling oil and vegetables in my direction. I avoided the flying grease, but Anthony was headed toward the back door. He pulled down a set of baker's shelves as he went. Dishes and equipment crashed everywhere. Lots of noise and chaos and shattering pottery.
"My sister's dead,"
he screamed back at me. Meaning what? That now he was really mad? I grabbed a kitchen knife and went after him. Chapter 122. As I jumped out into a long, wide alleyway, the delivery entrance, I heard sirens wailing from somewhere in the neighborhood. I hoped to hell they were for us, and that somebody would figure out real fast that I was back here with DCAK. The alley ran behind several buildings, with a dead end to my right and a busy street to my left, about 50 yards off, farther than he could have run by now, anyway. So where was he hiding? He had to be close, but where? I threw open the nearest dumpster, and a repulsive wave of garbage smell came up at me, but no Anthony. No DCAK. I turned my back on the alley just long enough to lean into the trash and make sure he wasn't there. Another 3 dumpsters lined the wall. Dusty, rusting cars were stacked on the other side. I checked down low. He wasn't hiding under any of them. Where was he? I saw him out of the corner of my eye, and just in time. I narrowly missed getting sliced across the face. He'd been behind one of the dumpsters, and he had a knife. He seemed confident and scarily under control, considering the circumstances. Almost like he was playing another role. I sure wasn't. Knives weren't my thing. But the kitchen blade was the only weapon I had right now. He came for me again. The blade whiffed past my face, barely missing flesh. He sliced the blade at me again, and again, and again. I feinted a short thrust back at him, and he laughed.
I think I'm gonna like this. I know I am. I trained in hand-to-hand. How about you, Dr. Cross?
He didn't bother to taunt or test. Just stabbed the knife at me again. I jumped away, and he missed, but not by much. An inch or so. Anthony's face was intense. The veins pulsed, but his eyes remained playful. He was toying with me. Was he missing on purpose? Stretching this out?
The once great Alex Cross. Too bad we don't have an audience. Oh, but you do. I'm your audience this time, DCAK,
said a voice. We both turned, and there was Kyle Craig. Chapter 123. Kyle spoke, and he sounded exuberant, almost joyful. To see us? To be seen?
What a sight for sore eyes. The great DCAK, the great Alex Cross. Together at last in a duel to the death. With kitchen knives. I'd pay to see that one. But hey, I don't have to pay. I'm right here, aren't I?
DCAK held his knife up and poised, but he kept sneaking glances at Kyle.
What are you doing here? Admiring your work, of course.
Kyle seemed sincere enough.
Just like any of your other fans would if they could. They'd be lined up 20 deep on the street to see this. I've been following you ever since we met at the Cross House. You think I don't get your sarcasm?
DCAK snarled.
Be a waste of breath if you didn't. Be careful with Dr. Cross now. Watch him. He'll slice you up if he can. He's a cagey one.
DCAK stated flatly.
He can't hurt me. He's out of his league. And so are you. Oh, my.
Said Kyle.
Now you've gone and cut me, so to speak.
I said nothing to either of them. I was still looking for some kind of an opening. I wasn't very good with knives, but I was quick on my feet. Maybe that would help me, save me somehow. But now I had Kyle to worry about, too. How had he gotten here? And what was his current connection to DCAK? Had it just changed?
He's focused on the fight. You're not.
Kyle coached DCAK from the sidelines.
That's all I'm trying to point out. Take it for what it's worth.
DCAK looked back at me.
All right, then. Let me put Cross down. In your honor.
In your honor? What was that supposed to mean? Then he thrust his knife again and missed, but this time he meant business. Another fast swipe and he sliced my arm. Blood streamed onto my shirt and dripped onto the pavement.
That's better, DCAK.
Kyle cheered him on, his voice suddenly guttural.
Now go for it. Put him down. Kill the bastard.
DCAK was starting to breathe harder, through his mouth. Maybe that could be an advantage for me? I circled to the left, then I changed directions. No logic to it, just instinct. I was moving the other way when he swiped his knife at me again. He missed. I stabbed at him and nicked his arm. Blood spurted from the wound. Nasty game, knives. Kyle applauded. He slowly, slowly clapped his hands, but he didn't speak any more encouragement. I moved in a circle again, but I went faster this time. Suddenly I reversed directions, then I came back the other way. Suddenly, DCAK roared in a deep voice and charged at me. I pivoted to the left, and for a second my back was exposed. He was still leaning the other way, which meant... what? I continued to pivot all the way around. Then I set my right leg and drove my knife up and under his arm. The knife found flesh, muscle. It finally sunk into his chest. He moaned almost as loudly as he had roared a second before.
You stupid son of a bitch!
Then he went down and laid there on his back, wide eyes staring at nothing. I spun away from DCAK and looked at Kyle. I had a knife. He had a gun.
He wasn't much, was he?
Kyle grinned. Chapter 124. He kept on talking, almost as if he were excited to see me. Maybe I was the one he'd been following.
I was so hurt that you didn't come out to Florence to visit me more, Alex. You have no idea. They put you in a tiny cell and keep you there 23 hours every day. It's inhumane and does no good at all. I'm serious about that. Maybe I'll make a deeply disturbing film, like An Inconvenient Truth, or The Road to Guantanamo, call it Never See the Sun Again. Play it in all the art houses here in the East. Get the bleeding hearts on my side.
You killed a lot of people, Kyle. You committed murders since you've been out. How many this time? Kyle shrugged, and then he mugged for me. He wasn't as good an actor as Anthony, just a more subtle killer.
Honestly, I didn't bother to keep count. There was Mom, of course. Oh, was that a hallucination that I had?
No. You slaughtered your mother.
Slaughtered her, did I? That seems extreme. I don't actually recall that much about it. Perhaps I was in a rage state. Can you give me some gory details? I want to hear it from you, Dr. Cross.
Is that part of this, Kyle? The psychologist connection?
Could be. I never thought about it quite like that.
I stared at Kyle for a moment and didn't speak. He was so incredibly evil, with no conscience. I wondered how his reflexes were these days. He seemed confident enough with the gun in his hand, and why shouldn't he be? Why would he have any trouble shooting me now?
Kneel on the ground, Alex, just to be on the safe side. All that training at Quantico is kicking in.
I stood there, refused to obey him. Kyle held his gun arm out, perfectly straight and still.
I said, kneel on the ground. There's still a chance that I won't kill you. I might want an audience for what I'm going to do next.
That got my attention. An audience? What are you going to do now, Kyle? And what part did you play for DCAK and his partner? He smiled and seemed to be formulating an answer.
Interesting questions. If I tell you, is it because you won't be around to see it, or because I want you to be able to anticipate the slaughter, as you call it? Kneel. This is your last warning, Alex.
I bent my knees slightly, and then I went down on them. I didn't see that I had a choice. Kyle didn't like to be disobeyed. That much I knew for sure.
Ah, that's good. This is how I like seeing you. As a supplicant. You know, I almost wish DCAK was alive to witness this.
You could have saved him.
Maybe, probably not.
I really think the boy wanted to die. I studied his early murders while I was still an agent. He made contact with me at Florence. I think I might have been a father figure to him.
You'd know better than me.
I can't live in the past, though. I'm not much for regrets, either. You can understand that, can't you?
What did he mean when he said, in your honor?
Oh, that. He was a fan, of course. Who isn't? So was the girl. His sister? Who knows? They got the messages to me at ADX through my lawyer, another fan. They're all just freaks, Alex. Although, he did give you a good run. I helped him with a few ideas. The football stadium, that was me. And I suggested Tess Olsen, of course. That one was in my honor.
Kyle walked forward and he put the gun to my temple. There wasn't any unsteadiness in his hand.
I, Kyle Craig, being of sound mind and body.
He smiled broadly, wickedly, insanely.
Choose to spare the life of Alex Cross. At this time, anyway.
He took a step away.
I told you 23 hours a day, 4 years in there. I can't let you off this easy. A couple of minutes of abject fear, that's nothing in comparison to what I went through. It's not enough payback. Not even close. You'll see.
Kyle started to back away.
I have bigger and better plans for you, Alex. One thing is for sure. I'm going to torture you and your family to death. Don't bother to try to hide them. I'm really good at finding people. That was my specialty at the Bureau. I have skills, Alex. The mastermind, remember?
Put the gun down, Craig. Do it slowly, you piece of shit, or you really will understand payback. It was Bree. I couldn't see her yet, but I wanted to warn her about Kyle Craig and why you should never, ever warn him. My mouth opened. Chapter 125. Bree! Kyle had been an FBI field agent, and before that he was with Special Forces in the Army. He was an expert with knives, guns, even explosives, and I knew that from past experience. He was no one to fool with, no one to warn. He heard Bree's voice, and before she finished her threat, he was twisting his body around toward her and diving at the ground. I watched, unable to do anything to stop it from happening. Bree! His Beretta came up level and was aimed at the center of her chest. He wouldn't take a chance of missing what would be a difficult shot, especially while he was still moving. He had her in his sights, and I had one thought. Take me instead. I'm not sure if Bree waited until she had finished the words, "You really will understand payback." I doubt it. She fired, and Kyle Craig jerked in midair. His mouth flew open in surprise. His eyes went wide. He never got a shot off. He landed with a dull thud on the ground and lay there with one leg twitching. Finally, he let go of the Beretta. Then, nothing at all. Nothing. Blessedly, nothing. I hurried forward, kicked away his gun. I crouched beside Kyle, who I'd once thought was a friend, and who had turned into my worst enemy. His eyes were open, and he looked at me, right into my eyes. Maybe my soul. He stared, and I wondered if he was dying at that instant, and if he knew it. Then Kyle spoke, and he said something so very strange, something I didn't understand, not to this day.
In your honor.
Then a horrible rattle began to stir somewhere back in his throat. And I liked it. Sad to say, horrifying to me, I was relieved and exultant. I'd liked being in the audience, so much so that I clapped my hands together and applauded Bree. And then suddenly, Kyle was on all fours, then up on his feet. He pulled another gun from a holster behind his back. Bree had lowered her gun, and now he had us.
Put down the gun, detective,
he said in the calmest voice I'd ever heard.
I don't want to kill you right now. Not just yet. Tell her, Alex.
She won't listen.
Then she's a dead girl. Put the gun down. For Christ's sake, if I wanted to kill you, I would have pulled the trigger already.
Bree bent at the knees and lowered her gun to the ground. Kyle pulled the trigger, but he missed her on purpose.
You know, Bree, the advice about chest shots versus head shots is good as far as it goes, but...
He patted his own chest.
It doesn't allow for the possibility of vests, which I always wear to parties like this one. You should too, especially with that exemplary chest of yours.
Kyle started to back away from us. Then he smiled and said,
Oh, what the hell. Sorry, Alex.
He fired in Bree's direction twice and purposely missed again. Then he laughed and ran down the alley, disappearing around the first corner, still laughing. The Mastermind. Chapter 126. DCAK was still alive. Bree and I met up with Nana and the kids at Washington Hospital Center, where Samson and Anthony were being treated. Sandy Quinlan hadn't made it. She died before the ambulance came. Samson was going to be fine, according to his doctors. He needed stitches and fluids, but I had no doubt he'd be driving the staff crazy by checkout time tomorrow. Eventually, we retreated to a waiting area so that Billy and Jakarta could have some time alone with the big man. Billy didn't seem too happy with him, though, or with me. The kids were full of questions, and Bree and I answered as many as we could. Though, as always, we didn't have all the answers ourselves. Not yet, and maybe not ever, especially where Kyle Craig was concerned.
So, who were those people, really? DCAK?
Janny wanted to know. I've always loved her curiosity, but I wasn't sure what to make of this budding interest in things forensic. The last thing we needed was another dragon slayer in our house on Fifth Street. We should know more soon, I told her. Both Anthony and Sandy, her body anyway, had been fingerprinted. I thought they'd probably show up somewhere in somebody's files, maybe even in Kyle Craig's old notes from his FBI days. I finally sent the family home, and Bree and I went to look in on our captive. We watched Anthony through a window while a post-op medical team got him stabilized for transfer. He was handcuffed to a hospital bed and lay there the whole time, staring at the ceiling. I'd seen this stillness in him earlier that day. It was impossible to read. Was it defeat? Calculation? Boredom? The answers would help us know whether he was headed for a penitentiary or a psych ward.
The names are Aaron and Sarah Dennison.
I turned to see Ramon Davies standing behind us.
IAFIS turned Aaron up. He's wanted in two states that we know of so far, California and Nevada. Aaron was a suspect in two murder cases, one in each state. His sister Sarah's record was clean. They did some acting in Vegas, Tahoe, Sacramento, mostly regional theater.
Where were they right before D.C.? Do we know that? I asked the superintendent.
In and out of L.A.? Why?
I shook my head and looked back through the window at him. Aaron, not Anthony. Just curious if any of it was the truth, the things he told me. L.A. would be where he followed the case with Michael Bell, the Mary Mary case. He must have been in touch with Kyle Craig from there, too.
What about the webcast? Bree asked. We have any idea how many people saw it?
Davies looked from her face to mine.
Let's just say if you ever wanted to sell your story, now would be a good time.
We laughed, but only because there was nothing we could do about the reach and popularity of the webcast.
He basically got what he wanted, didn't he? Bree said. He got famous anyway. She'll be famous now, too, as disciples of Kyle Craig, at the least.
I turned away from the window, suddenly done looking at him, and done with this case. Hope it was worth it, Anthony. I heard a shout that was muffled by the observation window. I looked back.
Dead man walking!
Aaron yelled.
That's what you are, Cross!
Epilogue. I didn't hear anything from Kyle Craig, which didn't completely surprise me. He'd made terrible threats, but if he had wanted me dead, he would have done it. He had his chance in the alleyway. So the next few days passed quickly for me, but probably slowly for Damon. My boy was leaving home. By the time we were packing the car to send him off to his first semester at Cushing Academy, he was showing his emotions on a fairly regular basis. Cool just didn't cut it for him anymore. He and I spent the final couple of days driving up to Massachusetts together. We stopped to see our cousin Jimmy at the Red Hat in Irvington and had a fine meal and listened to some jazz, then continued on our way. I noticed that I was showing my emotions on a regular basis now, too. I figured that was a good thing. Growth, maybe. I was troubled by my life, though. I wondered if I had a soul anymore. All these killings. Understanding the killers.
So, you know when family weekend is?
Damon asked me as we got close to Sturbridge, Massachusetts. Don't worry, it's already on my calendar. I'll be there with bells on.
Well, if you have a case or whatever, I understand.
Damon. I waited for him to look at me. I'll be there. No matter what.
Dad.
He gave me a grown-up stare and a little frown he'd inherited from Nana Mama.
It's okay.
I know you'll come if you can. It wasn't quite like looking at myself across the front seat, but there was no closer copy in the world.
You're going to have a great year, Day. In school and on the basketball court. I'm really proud of you. 100%.
Thanks.
I think you're going to have a great year, too. Keep an eye on Bree. She's good for you. Everybody thinks so. Your decision, though, of course.
Just then, my cell phone rang.
What now?
I had a crazy thought. To throw the damn thing right out the car window. And that's what I did. And Damon clapped, and we laughed as if it were the funniest thing I'd ever done. Maybe it was, too. We arrived at the school in Ashburnham, Massachusetts, and it was so gorgeous, such an eyeful, that I wished I could spend the next 4 years there myself, relive my youth, or something like that. A message was waiting for me at the admin building. It was from Superintendent Davies.
Alex, I have bad news. There have been some murders in Georgetown.
But that's another story, for another time.
This has been an Hachette Audio production of Double Cross, written by James Patterson and read by Peter J. Fernandez and Michael Stuhlbarg. Produced and directed by Kevin Thompson. Production supervised by Dennis Kao. Double Cross is also available in print from Little Brown and Company, a division of Hachette Book Group USA. Text copyright 2007 by James Patterson. Audio production copyright 2007, Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Except as permitted under the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, no part of this publication may be reproduced, distributed, or transmitted in any form or by any means, or stored in a database or retrieval system without the written permission of the publisher. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales, is entirely coincidental.